One afternoon in the video store, the clock rang out for lunch. The owner, Dave, craved Taco Bell and a cheesy gordita crunch. Meanwhile, load of the waste of Morton Hoof sat alone in his room. And Morton Hoof had Bell to sell, but he craved the power of cartoons. Dave and Hoof agreed to sell Bells for tunes and tunes for Bell.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Saturday Morning Apocalypse. Possibly, this may go down as my favorite run of episodes we ever do on Saturday Morning Apocalypse, and it has to do with the show we're discussing today. I'm your host, David Snyder. I'm joined again by Ruler of the Wasteland, Patron of the Animated Arts, and Cape Crusader, Morton Hoof.
And a toy collector.
And a toy collector, which is very, that is perfect considering the episode that we're discussing today. We're, of course, finally tackling probably my favorite cartoon ever as a kid and as an adult, Batman, the animated series.
Never heard of it.
Oh, shut up, Street Shark. Get out of here. Like, this show was super formative. We'll get to the episode, Beware the Grey Ghost, in a little bit. But this is Batman. We got to kind of touch upon it was such a touchstone, such an important part of my childhood, and of pop culture. This was my go-to as a kid for Saturday morning cartoons. This is what I watched. Fox Kids, I remember it was Fox Kids, and I think it switched over to Kids WB at some point. But it was such a... I can't express enough how important this show was to me as a kid. As a fan of Batman, I can't tell you how many times I watched the 1989 Tim Burton movie. It was one of those movies that I think I like wore the tape out because I watched it so much. And then this comes along around the time of Batman Returns, and it does a perfect job of walking the line between gritty crime noir and sort of dark stuff that the movies touched upon, the first two movies, and also being able to like dip its toe into a little more silly comic book things that maybe the movies didn't. And it just straddles that line perfectly, all the while having what is arguably, I think, one of the coolest and most well-done visual styles a cartoon could have, I think. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the artistic composition, pretty much on every level, but specifically the illustration is just, it's just next level.
But next level, yeah, and it's good you say next level, because this is taking it up a notch from I think it's safe to say this show takes it's like visual DNA comes from the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons, and I think they've said that in many interviews, like Bruce Timm and all the creators of the show, they really pulled from that. While this show doesn't have like the rotoscoping that Superman had, which is really cool, it definitely has that noirish style, and it just pays off in spades. Like this, like I said, like it is able to just walk that line between goofy and noir so perfectly, and it's just like a visual treat every time I watch any episode of this show, even one that I don't think is that good. It's still visually like a treat to see.
Yeah, I think that when you talk about, I guess any movie or TV show or cartoon or whatever, artistic piece, whenever you're trying to mesh, two different worlds, so you're kind of identifying, gritty noir seriousness and a little bit of comic book goofiness. Anytime you want a mixture, there's a balance that you have. The apex outputs are able to walk that line perfectly, like you were saying. And this show really does that. It does it seamlessly, I think that. And yeah. So you'll see it in at least the episodes that we watched for this show. It does that masterfully, and I think even the intro is just, it's not like, say, like X-Men or something like that, where you're like, oh wow, this is, like, you're gets your adrenaline going. Like it's more like it kind of envelops you and then takes you into this place. Yes. And
well, it's almost, the intro is like an episode onto itself. It's like a short little vignette or whatever that just, it's oh God, we could probably have a whole episode on just the intro of this show.
Yeah. So I think, you know, my favorite, I don't know, I think we'll both probably gush about this show. Obviously, it means it's way closer to your heart than mine, but I still love the show. But I think that, like, for me, watching the show, turning it on, you know, it takes a few seconds to get to a moment that, like, you know, it's like a gut punch. So when Batman is on the roof and it just closes in, it's just the close-up of his face, and the only thing that's moving is his eyes. Like,
yeah.
Just that in itself is just like, whoa, this something special is going on here.
Well, and just like, yeah, it hits so hard on those noir levels. Like, I love one of the things I love most about this show, and it kind of ties in a little bit with the 1989 Batman movie, is that the world it inhabits is supposed to be present day, yet you have all these visual aesthetics that scream like the 30s and 40s. Like, you have like the intro starts with the Warner Brothers logo, and then like these lights come on, and suddenly it's like the lights of like a police blimp, you know?
Yeah.
Or a Zeppelin. Is it Zeppelin?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a police Zeppelin, and you're like, this has no place in present day. And the cops all ride around in like 30s and 40s looking cars. They dress like a 30s cop would dress. And it's just like it's doing that thing that Burton's movie did, where it's set in the present, but it's like an alternate present, like just a present where the 30s, the style of the 30s and 40s never died. It just kept going and going and going, and now you have like this weird blend of like present day, what would have been the 90s stuff, with 30s and 40s aesthetic. And it's just, it's so beautiful. And like I said, it gets you into that noir setting perfectly with just the music. And just the fact that I love the camera angles in the show. You get Dutch angles, you get like impressionistic, like almost like German impressionistic stuff. And just how it just goes down the length of this building, this bank. And then just these two characters all in black, just kind of all bathed in shadow, just walk up. And again, you mentioned the eyes. I love shifty eyes in cartoons. It's just, it always expresses like, oh, these fuckers are up to no good. And just, I love it. It's just the music, just it's just perfectly, the music and the visuals perfectly balance. And then this giant explosion happens, cut to the Batmobile. I've seen this intro probably a million times, and every time all these elements are working so well, it sucks me in every time. And like, I think I've mentioned this off air to like Ryan and Mike, like there are certain shows that I've seen so many times where if I rewatch it, I will actually skip the intro, like the theme song, whatever. You know, that became like a big thing in the 2010s, the feature of skipping the intro. And Ryan was saying that that's blasphemous. He's like, no, you gotta watch the theme song every time. It's like, I think we were talking about The Simpsons at the time. Like, I was saying, like, I skipped the couch bit. Like, just get me into the episode. He's like, no, that's fucking blasphemy. How could you skip the couch bit? I don't know. It's hard to explain. I don't know what it is. Maybe because that particular thing goes on a little. I don't know. But for whatever reason, Batman is one that I do not skip. Batman is one that I watch every time because, like you said, it sucks you. It just sucks you in like seconds in, and I feel compelled to watch this intro every single time.
Well, I think that the way I describe it, because I think that the Batman intro specifically is unique and stands apart from other intros in the sense that the vibe of the intro is so consistent with the rest of the show that yeah. It's almost like when you read a book, you know, when you start a new chapter, typically there's like a brief space at the top where it says, you know, might say the chapter number or the chapter title or whatever, and it's a part of that page. So you can't like skip that little section and then start just, you know, you don't get a literal half of a page or whatever. And so I guess my analogy is kind of alluding to the fact that the seamlessness with which the intro is connected to the rest of the episode, no matter which episode you're watching, is so natural that it's just, I guess you could skip it, but it doesn't, it feels like it's so necessary to the rest of the show. Like you're missing a part of the episode if you skip that intro specifically. And I think I'm with you in some cases. Like sometimes you can skip intros, especially if it's longer, but this is not a long intro either. It's like a perfect splash of what you're going to get.
Yeah, and it's very simple. And like, I think the thing is, with The Simpsons, you mentioned it feels like a part of the episode. That could sometimes be jarring for me because the intro they used for The Simpsons for the longest time was from the first season, and the animation is actually different from the intro going into an episode that you're watching if it happens to be a season like 3 through whatever, you know what I mean? So it's a little jarring in that sense. And also, I was telling Ryan, how many goddamn times can I see that fucking cash register guy scan Maggie over the thing? It's just like, I've had it. I've seen it. It's good.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much in the world of cartoons, there's two intros that you can't skip. Batman and Street Sharks. So.
Oh, God. Street Sharks! I still have that fucking thing in my head. Street Sharks!
You're welcome.
They bite! They bite! The Street Sharks! I will never forgive you for that. See, that's why we're doing so many of these Batman episodes here, because I need to purge the Street Sharks from my memory.
That makes sense. You know, you have something like Street Sharks, which is super lowbrow, and, you know, it could be bad for your health. I don't know, the science is still out. But yeah, so to help counteract that dosage of Street Sharks, which I'm still going to always defend, I still like Street Sharks, but it's nowhere near, Street Sharks doesn't belong in a museum, but Batman, the animated series, if you're going to put a cartoon in a museum, this is definitely one of the candidates, I think, so.
Absolutely. And I mentioned the Fleischer Superman series earlier. One other thing that that Batman the Animated Series does that I love is that they bring back, and I guess technically a lot of cartoons do this, but not necessarily in this style, the title card. The name of the episode with like the writer of the episode and the director. The Superman series did that, and it would always be like its own little art piece. You know what I mean? It would have like the name of the episode and like, it would just be a cool title card. Like you'd see like a cool image, and it would be like sort of an image that would sort of encapsulate the theme of the episode or just like the villain of the episode or whatever. And it's in addition to the intro, it's a great way to suck you into the show and really kind of prep you for what's to come.
Yeah. Just another ingredient to making a show that, you know, just offers something that's a complete experience. I think that the more cartoons we watch together, the more we're going to see, you know, variables that go into making a great show versus, you know, variables that maybe make a show poor or less experienced. But yeah, this is another one. I think back to my history and just thinking about different title cards that, you know, and it's just another part of the show that becomes memorable. And, you know, a lot of these shows are attached to some level of nostalgia for us. And, you know, that the title card's part of it.
Yeah, and this one in particular is great. So let's jump into the episode that we're talking about. It's season 1, episode 18, Beware the Gray Ghost. And this was my pick. So just to give you a little peek, in order to purge myself of the Street Sharks, I had requested, because typically Morton Hoof chooses the cartoons that we watch. This whole thing was kind of based on his unquenchable thirst for cartoons. So more often than not, always, I will, you know, bow down to his wishes for what cartoons we will watch. But because the Street Sharks were so just poisonous to me, I requested, I'm like, can I choose the next one that we do? It was Batman the Animated Series, and because we've mentioned that Batman was such an integral part to so many of our childhoods, Mike and Ryan finally decided to join us on this little venture, and they are going to join us on some upcoming episodes to talk about their favorite episodes.
Yeah, they're making their way through a dark alley right now.
Yeah, exactly. So this was my pick, Beware the Gray Ghost, and this one's very special to me because while I only sometimes watched the 1966 Batman series with Adam West, I was still aware of it, I still enjoyed it, and even as a kid, I was able to recognize Adam West's voice when he appears in this episode, and just that ingredient made this episode so special and so depressing when the story of this episode unfolds. And this one's really special to me just because it kind of represents like one of the earlier team ups that I think I maybe ever saw as a kid as far as comic books are concerned. And even though the Grey Ghost was created specifically for this cartoon, the fact that it was voiced by Adam West just made it seem so special. And it seemed like kind of like one of the first incarnations of a team up or crossover between two different versions of the same character.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think this episode is kind of reflective a little bit in some ways on different levels too. I think that, you know, you have flashbacks going on, you have parallel events, the original on-screen Batman to a new on-screen Batman, whether it's a, you know, live action or voice acting in whatever capacity. So you have these different linkages going on, and the episode stands out in all these different ways that, you know, make it unique and, you know, make it a little special. Like, you know, I think we've also talked about sometimes the intent behind the creators' voices or whatever they're offering to audiences. And this one seems like a lot of thought went into this episode.
Thought and care. And like I said before, depressing. Like this episode made me sad as a kid because the whole episode deals with this character of Simon Trent, voiced by Adam West, who decades prior had played a character on TV called the Grey Ghost, which is basically, like, I guess in this universe of Batman, like a huge inspiration on Bruce Wayne and how he basically formed, for lack of a better term, the character of Batman. Inspired the persona he would develop with Batman, because Grey Ghost is basically Batman.
Yeah, he's the inspiration behind a lot of what this Bruce Wayne, you know, has decided to include in his Batman persona, down to his base. I mean, they specifically call out in a moment in this episode that Batman's base in the show is modeled after Grey Ghost's base.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And it's just like another thing that I appreciate that this show did is that it doesn't play down to a kid crowd. Like, it still touches on like very serious themes. And in this episode, it's just the idea of like a washed up actor who can't get any more roles, who's been typecast. And on top of that, layering in this like meta level of the fact that it's voiced by Adam West, who also at this time was basically a washed up actor, and he couldn't get any real roles because everyone thought of him as Batman, this character that he played decades prior. And it's just, I mentioned like as a kid, this episode made me sad. Like, it's because like, I kind of knew that even as a kid watching this, that Adam West was more or less like a washed up actor. And that made me sad. Like, the moment when Simon Trent is just like, he's trying to like, he can't make his rent money. He has to sell the rest of his Grey Ghost memorabilia. He gets barely anything for it. And just when he, you know, it is soul crushing. The moment when he looks at the fucking memorabilia shelf and he looks at the Grey Ghost poster and he's just like,
"Well, old friend, you paid the rent for the last time."
That kills me inside. And again, as a kid, I'm just like, I'm not thinking of Simon Trent. I'm thinking of Adam West. I was almost thinking, was this like based on real life? Like, did he do the same thing? Did he sell off all his Batman memorabilia? Is Adam West having trouble paying off his rent? Like, as a kid, it was soul crushing, and it's still soul crushing watching it today, even though I know that Adam West would eventually get on Family Guy, and he too would have like a very successful voiceover career after this. Like, just, you know, like, I don't know, like 7 or 8 years after the show came out with Family Guy. But it's just I don't know what it is. But like I said, I love the fact that this show doesn't play down to kids. Like, these are serious themes that this show is tackling, and it doesn't dumb it down. I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, I think that the way I think what I appreciate about it is for sure not dumbing it down, but it's spending time with the issue. And I guess that's just another way of saying the same thing. But
it's character building. I like that they really build these characters.
Yeah, so it spends maybe relative to other cartoons, depending on its goals, it spends a longer time in the apartment of Adam West's character. It spends more time in the apartment and spends more time with him being sad, and it spends more time. It almost like this is like somewhat of his episode in some ways.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, this is absolutely his episode. And that's one thing I want to mention. Getting back to the title card, that is one of the cool, that is like a piece of art I want like in my house. Like that title, it's just a simple title card of like the gray ghost, like, you know, with a gun. You know what I mean? It just says, "Beware the gray ghost." And it's so fucking cool. It sucks you in. It's mysterious. And like you said, one thing you mentioned was the cutting back and forth. I really like the way this is done. It cuts back and forth between a young Bruce Wayne in black and white, by the way, which is a great touch, watching the gray ghost and then cutting to the present. And you see the events of that episode that he's watching play out in real life in the present. And it goes back and forth, back and forth. And it's just done so well. And it's, again, it sets up that noir vibe. And the music. Let's talk about the music in this episode, and really just the series in general. This has to have some of the best music in a show, cartoon or otherwise, ever.
Yeah, for sure. I think it, and that's clear from the intro. The very beginning, the music is just, it sounds really, I think the way I remembered it is when I was a kid and I would watch this show, the intro, but more so the music, I think when you're a kid and you're not exposed to everything yet, you don't know about very much yet, but certain things stand out as like different and they mean something. So like as a kid, I remember thinking like this music seems adult, I guess, for lack of a better term back then.
Seems like music that should be attached to a movie.
Yeah, definitely. It's very cinematic and it's very, you know, it's very professional.
It's so big too. This is it's a good thing to point out. This wasn't a usual thing. Like cartoons did not typically have a full orchestral accompaniment like this show does. It just feels like you said earlier. It just feels like it's on a whole nother level. It's not Street Sharks with the rockabilly thing. It's a full on orchestral score complemented by a main theme by Danny Elfman from the movies. And mad props to Shirley Walker. She was like the conductor and the composer for a lot of the Batman animated series stuff. She would do the Mask of the Phantasm and movies. her influence on the show is also very big. And like this is one of those shows that I will listen to the soundtracks for a lot of the episodes. Like this episode in particular, Beware the Gray Ghost. The theme that this episode has captures just the mythos and the pathos and just the sadness of this character Simon Trent so well that it's one that I go back to a lot.
It's very good, and I think that, like you said, this movie or this show consistently just builds on itself or builds within itself, it's every ingredient goes to making a complete immersive story. So it's like, yeah, it can stand on its own, but it's even better when it's included in this experience.
Yeah, for sure. Let's get into the story of Beware the Gray Ghost. Hoof, why don't you explain?
Well, this is your episode. I think that, you know,
but I suck at explaining synopsis.
I think that okay. This of all the episodes that we're ever gonna do or we have done, this is your time to shine, Dave.
Okay. So there are it's present day Gotham and shit is blowing up. Banks are blowing up. I think what was it like? Museums are blowing up. Basically, places are being blown up, and the city is being held for ransom by someone calling themselves the Mad Bomber. Shit's blown up. They don't know what's going to blow up next, and unless the city gives him a shitload of money, he's going to keep blowing stuff up. And we find out that the way he does this is by using remote control toy cars to evade police, evade detection, and blow shit up. And the root of the toy cars goes all the way back to this old adventure TV show that young Bruce Wayne would watch called The Gray Ghost. Turns out, and this is the point of the episode where it dips its toe into goofy comic book territory and it almost threatens the cool mythos and noirness established in the first two-thirds. Hoof, you're smiling right now. You know where I'm going with this. It turns out that a mad toy collector
represent my people.
is using these old Grey Ghost licensed remote control toy cars, which appeared in an episode of the show. He's basically duplicating the events of an episode called The Mad Bomber by using these toy cars. And why does he want all this money, you ask? Because he wants more toys!
Exactly! What other reason could there be?
This is basically a Martin Hoof's origin story.
Oh, God. I mean, you know, currency is worthless now in the wasteland, but once upon a time, there was, there was a moment in my life where I could have walked down the path of crime because in my pursuit of toy collection. Because you can never have enough toys.
I just imagined a Morton Hoof giving the same crazy monologue that the toy collector does in this. He's like, I love toys. They do this. They do that.
You can turn them on. They can play music. They can dance. You can pose them.
They can even hold a city for ransom. The power of the toy.
Not so unlike the way I'm holding this video store ransom and making you watch all these cartoons.
Except you do not use a little remote control toy cars. You use giant burly men on motorcycles with like human face masks on. It's kind of terrifying.
You know, the times have changed, so.
But anywho, getting back to the story, Batman starts to realize that these events are like, why does this seem so familiar? And he realizes that everything is playing out exactly as it did in the Grey Ghost television series, which he watched as a kid. He reaches out to Simon Trent to get some help. This gets into the crossover I was getting into earlier. Simon Trent puts on, in one of the coolest moments of the show, by the way, of the episode, Simon Trent puts his costume back on and rescues Batman when the toy cars are blowing shit up. And like, Simon, the Grey Ghost costume in this is so cool. He's basically the Shadow. Like his outfit is based more or less like the Shadow. It's kind of like a sort of like a, he's got like a cape over like a weird, I guess kind of like, I don't want to say business suit, but it's like, it's one of those 30s things where it like, kind of like the Rocketeer where it like, it has like a flap and like buttons up over the chest type of thing.
Yeah, I knew like, it's very easy to know why you love this character and you love this episode because like this, I saw parallels to Rocketeer. I'm like, oh, God, that makes
sense. I don't know if you've discussed this on the show or not, but I love the Rocketeer. I love like those 30s, 40s serial heroes. And yeah, that's
also features a Zeppelin,
which also features a Zeppelin. Yes. It's just such a cool aesthetic. I like it. And I like that for a show that takes so much inspiration from Max Fleischer cartoons of the 30s and 40s, that they have an episode where the side hero of the episode is literally a 30s or 40s like hero.
Yeah, so it's working on so many levels for Dave. Like this is his complete wheelhouse.
Yes. But getting back to the toy collector. So, you know, long story short, they realize that, you know, Batman runs the analysis like, hey, it's got your fingerprints all over him, Simon Trent. It's like, but I don't know what's going on, Batman. I sold this shit to that toy collector guy years ago. Oh, shit. And it's kind of funny, too, because the ending of the show, once they figure out who it is, it's like they just go straight to him. I don't want to say it's anticlimactic, like, because they have like an action scene with the toy collector. He uses all his fucking various toys and one of my favorite moments of the episode, he like presses a button and like this little toy soldier guy shoots like a little like piece of plastic at Batman and it just bounces off his chest. Yeah. But I don't want to say it's anticlimactic, but it ends fairly quickly. They basically just punch him or whatever. It's just like, well, yeah, and then some explosions happen and he loses all of his toys. I don't want to say it's anticlimactic, but the whole idea of the toy collector, I don't mind it on its own. It is silly and goofy, and I like that. But I'm not sure if it undermines the cool pathos and noir stuff that the first two-thirds of this episode set up. Does it?
Well,
did it for you?
I could see the argument. It doesn't for me. I think that this episode this episode just seems really ambitious. And I think that when you have, you know, less than 30 minutes with all the cartoon or commercials and stuff like that, that they would show, it's very difficult to give this the ending maybe it would deserve, but I think it's fine. And I think that on some levels, this episode does have this idea of nostalgia and arrested development going on. And, you know, the reflection on childhood and stuff like that. So there, I do think that when you learn, oh, the true villain of this episode is just some nerdy kid who likes toys. Like, it's like grimly funny, because you think I guess there's the debate if Batman ever really grew up, like maybe he's, you know, stuck in, you know, this world of, Arrested Development or whatever. But, if we think that this is a world of adults and, like, you know, Simon Trent is the, you know, the depressing world, it's grimly funny to see the villain be a kid who never entered that world, who just stayed in the world of toys. So,
well, I'm glad. That was the main, almost kind of one of the main themes of this episode that I noted too, was nostalgia and how dangerous nostalgia can be. And like you said, Arrested Development. So I guess technically theme wise, this toy, I guess I was more responding to like just the overt goofiness of this toy collector. But theme wise, it does play out because Simon Trent is, you know, he can't move on. He's trying to move on from the Gray Ghost, you know, and leave it behind. He's like, that's a character I played. I'm an actor. I can do other roles, and people can't see him as anything but that. And then you have this toy collector who refuses to move on. He loves toys, and he literally has a Gray Ghost section in his store. I'm sorry, Mr. Trent, it's not selling anymore, but I love it. You know, it's an interesting theme, but I'm not quite sure what they're trying to say with this theme, because if Batman didn't hold on to his nostalgia with the Gray Ghost, he wouldn't have found out about the Mad Bomber. You know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't for nostalgia, Batman wouldn't have known to reach out to Simon Trent. If it wasn't for nostalgia of Simon Trent holding on to all this merchandise, he wouldn't have been able to give Batman the episode of the Mad Bomber, which led him to solve the mystery of the toy collector. So is the episode saying that nostalgia is good? Is that what they're saying?
I think you're thinking black and white, and I don't think it's so binary. I think that
nostalgia revitalized Simon Trent's career. If he didn't hold on to all those tapes, he wouldn't have had his new career when all the people are like, oh, the Gray Ghost is back, and now I'm in the spotlight again.
Yeah, very end, so there, something happens in that episode where Bruce Wayne, he goes on this investigation, and he's like, because he's thinking about the Mad Bomber and the show he used to watch as a kid.
He can't quite remember who the actor was.
He goes to this, well, first he wants to see, like, the episode or whatever, and he goes to this shop, or I don't know if it's a library or whatever, that has all, like, pretty much every TV show ever, and he asks for the Gray Ghost, and he finds out that, you know, the studio was burned down, and they lost all their copies or whatever, so he can't get it.
This is basically me, by the way. When he goes to investigate, this is basically me, the guy, like, with the fucking thirst buster, just like, yeah, we got everything, man, what you need? The Gray Ghost. Sorry, keep moving. You know, sorry, we don't got that one. I'm basically the fat guy behind the counter in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, there's all these characters that resonate with us on a personal level. So I'm the first character, there's the video guy. But it was so cool at the end. This is another level of like, oh, so cool, like on a personal level, because at the very end, this footage or the show is unearthed because, you know, Simon Trent had them all along. And so now they're available to the public, and so there's this huge resurgence, and it just reminds me of like when old movies are refound or new footage is found, and they can, you know, put out a new version or whatever. And that's really cool. Like, you know, as you know, if you're a fan of any property and something is unearthed, it's a big deal.
So basically what we're saying is, and what the episode is saying is, nostalgia rules and it saves lives.
Exactly.
Both figuratively and literally.
That's exactly what the show is saying. That's exactly what we're saying. And it's scientific fact.
Don't move on. Stay a kid. Stay in a sense of arrested development. Because it will not only save your life, it'll save the lives of countless innocents in the city.
And it will restart your career.
Yes! Nostalgia is good. In fact, nostalgia is great. Listen to, this is all the show is Apocalypse Video. Just nostalgia. Like, listen to, we review all these old movies and TV shows and shit. Isn't nostalgia great?
It gives us life. But I think the real lesson here is the financial success that Simon Trent re-experiences at the very end. And I think that, you know, people come to this show for the Batman talk or the cartoon talk, but they're really staying for the financial talk. And that's what we offer to you guys.
It makes me wonder, like, so he had the tapes. I guess they basically, in the show, it looks like they're just like VHS tapes of the show that he just has in his closet every episode. And no,
in the closet, they were like reels of film.
Oh, were they reels of film?
Well, they were the canisters.
Oh, that's right, because Alfred puts it on like a projector.
Yeah, so it looks like the original, it looks like he had the negatives or something.
Holy shit, that's another question. How did Simon Trent obtain these negatives?
Well, that's the thing. It's you know, if you look deeper into this episode, it gets a little suspicious that maybe Simon Trent isn't so innocent, because the studio was set on fire and they set all the negatives in the box. And if we think that the toy collector is young, and he looks like he's a teenager, so he could not have been alive to set the fire to the studio. So
did a fit of like revenge and just like, you know, they canceled the show. Did Simon Trent burn the studio down?
Yeah, and so maybe, you know, the situation that he found himself in when he's trying to sell all his stuff to pay the rent is just the karma that he reaped from burning down that studio.
I like where this is going. Maybe a prequel episode of Batman the Animated Series is in the works. Secret origins of the Gray Ghost.
Yeah, so I was doing some digging, and I think that the original commentary for this episode, which they did not end up releasing, did expose those secrets, but I was able to acquire them anyways. So
It makes me wonder if the studio burned down, if the studio was no more, would they like somehow relinquish the rights to those camera negatives that Simon Trent possesses? Like, does it matter anymore if the studio burned down? Are they up for grabs?
So we know that Batman and Bruce Wayne both, you know, play by different rules, and so I could easily imagine, you know, Simon Trent vocalizing his problems to the world or out into the ether that, hey, I have these tapes, but I can't release them yet because I don't actually have the rights. So this is kind of illegitimate. And then Bruce Wayne's like, oh, maybe I can help because, you know, I'm a quote unquote friend. And so
I used to watch your show with my father.
So he, you know, he slips money to the right people. And now, oh, Simon Trent, guess what? You can release these and now you can make a lot of money. So I don't know.
There's a whole nother level of seediness going on in this episode with our heroes, no less.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's another theme that this episode lays on, is the fact that you can't even really trust your heroes. I mean, they're getting around rights issues. I mean, those negatives belong to the studio, man. They're breaking the law.
Yeah. Well, or maybe this episode is saying that the rights, maybe it's commenting on the ability for studios to own rights to shows like that when, you know, they aren't the parties directly involved in the end product. I don't know.
It makes me wonder, like, was there anyone inside the studio when it burned down? Did he literally kill some people, Simon Trent?
Okay, so for sure, an implied thing in this episode, I think, is that people were dying when these bombs were going off. Like,
definitely.
So, death was in this episode, maybe off screen, but nonetheless.
That also gives it another layer. Like Simon Trent is a real bad guy. Like, I just now I'm thinking, oh my god, you just recontextualized this whole episode for me. Like, all this time when Batman's with this hero and this and that and in the Batcave, and he's all giving him these wry smiles, like, yeah, I took it from inspiration from your show. The whole time Simon Trent is carrying this dark secret with him that he murdered an entire studio of people out of vengeance because they canceled his show. God, this episode turned dark, man.
It's a dark show. I mean, that's yes. One thing that we didn't really talk about, but just the show is literally dark.
Well, Batman, so Batman leaves like a note, like, so Simon Trent sells all his shit to pay off his rent, and literally he goes back to his apartment, and like he discovers that all of his shit has been bought and like returned to his to his apartment with a note saying, like, you know, meet me here, I need help or whatever. And it's so great because I love that the show, even though it goes goofy at times, Batman always stays an intimidating figure. Like, when Simon Trent's, like, waiting for him at the meetup spot, he's looking around. There's, like, you know, like, steam coming out of, like, the sewer and shit. It's very, very cool looking. It's very dark. And Simon Trent turns around like, ugh! And Batman just walks out of the steam, and he's like, I need to talk to you. I need your help. And the music is all ominous. I love that they make Batman intimidating in this show.
Yeah, and another thing that stood out to me watching this show, more than any of the other shows that we've watched thus far, is the skill that they plan the commercial breaks with.
Yes.
So that really stood out in these episodes in Batman is like, you know, I mean, you can cut at any point in any show. And some of the shows that we've watched either, you know, I just don't notice it or they don't care or whatever. It doesn't really make any sense or whatever. But this show, it's like, it's very clear where they're doing it and why they're doing it. It all makes sense. And like it almost feels like each cut is a cliffhanger, which is, you know, yes, the way it should be. So I just thought that was really cool.
Well, it's like each cut ends on a moment for the audience. And then when it come back, you're like, ugh. You know? it's so skillfully done, this show. But now I don't know, dude. I'm not going to be able to think about this episode in any other way than Simon Trent's a fucking madman who needs to be stopped.
The mystery of the burnt studio.
Yes, I never thought about that before, but of course it was Simon Trent who burned down the studio. He has all the virtual camera negatives. He stole them. He's a lunatic. He has to be stopped. You know what? Oh my God. The name of this episode takes on a whole new meaning now. Beware the Gray Ghost. Beware Simon Trent. That's why it's called Beware the Gray Ghost.
Oh my gosh. We are uncovering the truth, the hard-hitting facts.
Oh, we're digging my deep. God. That's what the creators, that's what the writers were trying. That's what they intended. Like they oh my God. I feel like the end of a cliffhanger on this episode right now. Like, you know, it's just like, oh my God. All right. Well, I want to thank you, Hoof, for giving this episode a whole new meaning. Now it makes it that much more richer, like watching this episode now and thinking back to it, like all those little moments, and just like, because I really think that is legitimate. This isn't just some funny thing that we're talking about discussing the episode. You connect the dots. I think that might have been what they were going for. He burned down that goddamn studio. Like, I'm not joking around right now. I think that might have been what happened.
Wow. Well, I'm happy that I'm able to help you. And I think that another thing is that Batman is a detective, right? So when we watch this show, we need to keep our eyes wide and our ears open for hints that others are going to miss, because we need to put our detective hats on too.
Oh, I love it. Well, this made my favorite episode even better, Hoof. I'm so glad that we started watching Batman the Animated Series. I can't tell you how joyous I feel right now. But
I'm glad that you're happy, because I love cartoons. I love the show. So it's a win-win-win-win-win.
This is like how I'm feeling right now. This must be how you were feeling when we were talking about the Street Sharks. I get it now, Hoof. I get it. I get your excitement.
I'm just saying that, you know, the feeling that you probably got when you saw the rush of the toy cars speeding along these dark alleyways with that faint but ever-present buzz was the feeling that I got when the sharks were traveling under the concrete going jossum and just swimming.
Shark attack! All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of our look back on Batman the Animated Series. You can reach us if you let us know what your favorite episodes are, Wastelanders. We want to hear from you. What favorite episodes do you have of Batman the Animated Series? You can hit us up on Facebook at Apocalypse Video, Twitter at Apocalypse Video, or our email address, apocalypsevideopod@gmail.com. We want to hear from you. That's going to do it for this episode of Saturday Morning Apocalypse. We'll be back next time with more Batman with feet.
My toys, my beautiful toys!